your eyes to the skies. It's time for Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.
Spaced Out. David Britton, how are you?
That was haunting.
Oh, Spaced Out.
Actually, we have been talking about ghosts recently. Do you think that there's ghosts in space?
I don't think there's ghosts anywhere.
Ooh. Science man?
Afraid so. Yeah. You sound well, all of you.
Yeah, I think everyone's got a spring in their step today.
Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. The winter sort of seemed to have arrived, and then it went away, and it came back, and it's gone away again. So who knows when it'll truly arrive.
Who knows?
Yeah, I know. Who knows? It's I guess that's a question for Jack Frost.
Rick Breeze.
Really? Now, David, this afternoon, what are we chatting about?
We'll start off with space flight. Firstly, NASA has announced that it's opening up the International Space Station to commercial, private enterprise. So far, only astronauts from the space agencies have gone and used and stayed on the space station. As far as staying on the space station, that won't change. The idea is that privately funded astronauts can go up with either the Boeing or the SpaceX craft that are nearing the point of being able to take people up there. They'll go up on those and they'll stay for about a month and then return on those spacecraft. Those spacecraft go up, deliver cargo and stuff, and then they're loaded up with stuff to bring back. So these people would stay for about a month or so. I just realised I've gone out of order here, but anyway, I'll carry on.
that won't put too much extra strain on the International Space Station, will it? With resources and wear and tear and that sort of stuff?
No, the space station is getting old, and that's part of the reason for doing this. NASA wants to move away from the huge amount of money it costs to keep things going there, and by commercializing part of the operations, they'll get an income from that, and they can put that towards their main aim now, which is to get to the moon again. They will be adding another port so that they don't have to use the docking facilities that are there. Mm-hmm. And also temporary laboratories that can be used just by these companies while they're up there, rather than the other astronauts. I mean, the astronauts that go up there already, most of their time is spent running experiments and so on. There are about 50 private companies that already have experiments and so on, interest in what's going on up there, but that's entirely run by NASA and by the Russians. I should add that this is only the non-Russian end of things. Russia, they can still do what they want with their part of the space station. So it's not coming cheap, though. To stay a night there will be about $35,000.
$35,000 a night, and you're up there for a month.
What if you don't make a booking and you head up there and
you have to chuck you out to space, isn't it? I mean, you can't just go up. You've got to be trained. You've got to go through the astronaut training.
But how much does that cost?
Suitable, you simply don't go.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So, I mean, so like $11,000 for life support and bathroom privileges, $22,500 for supplies, including air and water.
Okay, no beers?
No alcohol on board,
okay,
no.
Okay, fair enough.
And the internet is $50 per gigabyte.
What's that? Internet?
Oh, yep.
Shouldn't that be a little bit cheaper? You're kind of closer to the satellites.
This is to link with Earth.
Right.
downlink.
I actually had one other question, Peter. David. Does the Russians have a name for their kind of space program like the Americans have NASA? Do they call it something gnarly or Do they just call? Is it just called the Russians?
A Roscosmos.
Whoa, shit! Glad I asked. What was it called again?
Roscosmos.
Roscosmos. I like
it. Ross is just Russian and Cosmos is space.
Oh, okay. Mint. It's not a guy called Roscosmos.
No.
Use your imagination, though.
Yeah, but remember, at the moment, all the Americans have to go to Russia to be trained, and they have to speak Russian.
I didn't know that.
They all have to learn to speak Russian and be able to be fluent in Russian because they are going up in Russian space. They've been doing that since 2011.
That is quite gnarly.
Absolutely. So this would not require them to go through that, but they'll probably be trained in facilities in both Canada and in Germany with the European Space Agency. But anyone who's going up there, any company is going to send people up there. It's not just anyone. You've got to have something that requires microgravity environment, so it's not just something you can do on Earth. It's got to have a connection with space exploration in some form or another. So it can't be just, say, medical breakthrough for people staying on Earth. It must be also applicable if you're going to, say, go to Mars, that sort of thing. And it's got to try and support the development of a sustainable low-Earth orbit economy. So what they're trying to do is basically move towards commercializing space in one way or another.
Do they think that they'll make greater leaps in technology through commercializing space?
Especially now that we know we've only got about 30 years left on this Earth. Are we going to hurry this up a little bit? Or what's the?
To answer the first part of the question, there could well be, but that's the problem with basic research. You don't know what you're going to find. It could be 25 dead ends, and then number 26 is a breakthrough. You really don't know. I mean, it's the old story of Edison. He didn't invent the light bulb. He went through like 1,000 different things before he came up with something that worked properly. It's a little bit like that.
He actually made the light bulb too good, eh? And then we ended up dumbing it down so it could break, and then you could get a new one. There's like a legendary like 8 filament light bulb that kind of never dies. It's a funny story. Anyway.
So that's what's happening with the space station. So yeah, I jumped ahead on a topic from what I was going to talk about.
Probably our fault, mate.
No, the space station is a good topic. But I guess the first topic was supposed to be NASA has chosen private lunar lander companies. What the heck?
Yeah, so we've just mentioned about NASA going back to the moon. And they want to get there by about 2024. And so what I've just talked about sort of works in with all of that, especially as far as freeing up resources at NASA to get to the moon. But to help get there, what they've chosen is 3 private companies to land experiments and various things on the moon for NASA in the meantime. And the first should be going there by about September next year. So these are small ones. So the first one, a company called Astrobiotic, it can send about 260 kilograms to the lunar surface. It doesn't have its own stuff. It'll have customers, and it's charging about $1.2 million per kilogram.
Far out.
To get payloads down onto the surface.
That's
just one way. Get it onto the surface, $1.2 million US dollars. So it doesn't come cheap. So there's a place called Astrobiotic. Their spacecraft's called Peregrine. There's one called Intuitive Machines. They can send about 100 kilograms to the surface, and their first touchdown will be the summer of 2021. So that'll be halfway through the year after next. And the third one, Orbit Beyond, they're actually the quickest. They should be going up there September next year, but they can only land about 40 kilograms. So they're small payloads, but they're the first steps to going back there. All of these, because they're new companies and smaller budgets, like $90 million is small by comparison with Apollo, for instance, they're all going to land on the near side of the moon. That's the part facing us, and in the northern hemisphere on flat areas. These are lava fields so that they don't have the problem of having to avoid rocks that could unbalance the lander and that sort of thing. So they're making things easy for themselves so they can make sure these payloads get to the surface where NASA wants to go, of course, is to the South Pole, where they know there's water ice.
Water ice on the moon.
Do they? Are they going to like go to where that? Do they leave that American flag up in 69 and they're going to go to it and go, look, see, we did it. Here it is here. With like high def cameras and stuff?
No.
Fucking classic. No. Classic. Yeah, let's just drop Bin Laden in the sea kind of stuff. Yeah, okay.
There's nothing stopping anyone else. I mean,
there's quite a lot actually. It's the moon.
Yeah, no, NASA wants to go to the South Pole where there's water ice, so you could use that to sustain yourself up there. But it's more difficult to land at the South Pole.
Mm. If they find water on the moon, is that going to change the game at all? Or?
Well, they have, but they've known about it for a while. I mean, there were previous missions that established that.
Yep.
But the thing is, it's not just sitting there. It's not in big chunks. It's in the rock itself.
And is it microbionic life in there and stuff, do they think, or what? Because wouldn't that mean extraterrestrial situation?
They think probably not, because no atmosphere for a start, and the temperature range is just too great, plus 100 to minus 100 degrees Celsius.
Hmm.
So very unlikely. That's not the main aim. The main aim to go to the moon is to get used to being able to live and work in that sort of environment. That's the first step to doing that on Mars.
So minus 100 and plus 100. Holy moly, that is crazy temperature range.
Yeah,
I thought finding life was the main aim.
That, but that's sort of in round figures. Mm. Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. They're in this like this. If you're in the sunlight, the front of your spacesuit, if that's in the sunlight, would be over 100 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
At the same time, the back of your spacesuit in the shadow would be minus 100 degrees Celsius.
So you've got to have a goddamn good spacesuit, don't you?
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yep.
Now, tell us a bit about the black hole, black hole.
Well, it's
the Milky Way black hole, the super massive black hole, the center of our galaxy, which was imaged a few months ago. We talked about that. Around a black hole, because it's got a lot of gravity, any gas or stuff left over from stars that got a bit close forms what's called an accretion disk, the spiraling disk of material. And they've been able to image hot gas about 10 million degrees Celsius in X-rays. When it gets that hot, it emits a lot of X-rays. But they've known about some cooler gas about 10,000 degrees further out. So the hot gas is about a trillion kilometers away from the black hole, a tenth of a light year. The cooler gas is a few light years, so you're talking about 20 trillion kilometers. It's a long way away. Mm. Remember, the black hole itself is 26,000 light years away. What this radio telescope in Chile, the Atacama Large Array, was able to detect the faint signal in microwaves, millimeter, submillimeter wavelengths, and they're able to detect this at a hundredth of a light year away. So, 10 times closer to the black hole than previously. And with that, they're able to show that the gas is definitely rotating, a bit like the Doppler effect. When it's coming towards you, it looks bluer, going away, it looks redder.
Okay, interesting.
And so they're finding out a lot more about what's going on at the center of our galaxy, using these amazing radio instruments in Chile.
Amazing. Now, what's happening with the night sky, sunset, sunrise?
Night sky, after sunset, Jupiter's really bright in the east. Have a look at that. It's already up when the sun goes down. About 8 o'clock, Saturn's rising, so have a look at that over in the east. On the 18th of June, in the west, after sunset, Mars, which is pretty low, will be joined by Mercury. So Mercury's going to come up and go quite close to Mars on the 18th, 19th of June. Have a look for that. At sunrise, we've got Matariki. Well, of course, it's the Matariki season now. So it's very low in the dawn sky, about 7 degrees above the horizon or so. So you need to get up on the hill or looking out from the east coast somewhere towards the Pacific. Venus is nearby, but it's dropping back towards the sun. In a couple of weeks' time, Matariki about 16 degrees above the horizon, so still pretty low. So if there's any cloud or anything around, it might be difficult, but it's well worth having a go.
Okay, cool. And what's coming up at the Stardome?
At Stardome, we've got, I'll just remind people of the injury now, we've got Matariki Dawn, the public show. That's on it on Wednesday to Sunday. That's at 7 p.m. all five evenings. We've got a new show called Matariki Night Sky. That's just on the weekends, on Saturday and Sunday. That's at 4 p.m. So that's a tour of the night sky, but with a bit of a focus and twist on Matariki. That's called Matariki Night Sky. And I just want to give a little bit of a heads up. In July, we're, of course, joining the celebrations of the Apollo landing 50 years ago. So the school holiday program, which begins on the 8th of July, is called Mission to the Moon. So the school holiday program in July will be about getting to the moon. And later in July, there's an exhibition. So we're celebrating the 50-year anniversary with what's called the Giant Leap exhibition.
All right. Hey, well, that sounds very, very, very interesting, David. And we'll say thank you very much for another great edition of Spaced Out. And
we will Spaced Out.
Spaced Out. Spaced Out. We'll check in with you in a fortnight's time. And everyone, head along to the... Oh, are you there?
I think that was a fuck you bye. It felt like a fuck you bye. Fuck you, bye.
Hopefully he's okay. Didn't drop the phone or something? Just fell down the stairs? Don't joke about that.
Control, we are docked. That was Spaced Out on 95 BFM, thanks to the Stardome Observatory and Planetarium.